Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of MTG Rants. I'm Tannen Grace, and as always, enjoy my Ross Merriam. Ross, I am back from the Pro Tour. I am somewhat alive and recovered, so we'll be talking about that on the episode today. And we got some spoilers from H3 a little early, which we'll talk about on the show, because they're officially released now, at least, because we were seeing these over the weekend, and I could see the employees of WotC were not happy. But they're like, look, we'll do what we can, that kind of stuff. So how are you doing, buddy?
I am well, just getting my prep work in for Richmond this weekend, where I'm gonna
cheating on me in Britain.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I gave you all the first chance.
I was in.
This was announced. Yeah, and you were in, and Brennan said he couldn't make it, so I had to go with my second choice, which was Harlan Fuhrer and Dan Jessup. So.
Do they know that they were the second choice?
Oh yeah.
Good. Okay. Just so they know.
they're fully aware, and I'm sure they do not care.
Yeah. I don't think anybody should, but yeah.
So I have been focused on Modern, since that's my seat for the team event in Richmond. Haven't been as focused on Standard. I'll be honest, Tannen, I didn't watch a ton of the Pro Tour. I watched a little bit on day one, and I just kept seeing Esper decks every single round, because it was like 30% of the metagame, and I thought, here goes like another crappy Standard format where there's clearly one best deck that's like way better than everything. And so I didn't tune in the next day, and all I saw on Twitter was just people going off about how much they loved the format and how balanced everything seemed. And if you look at the top 8 results, like, there's 2 Esper decks, but that's pretty reasonable for a deck that's 30% of the field. It's actually under expectation. 2 out of 8 is 25%.
Yeah, so, like, talking about it, like, I talked to a couple of my friends that were there, and then I overheard people talking about it, because, like, so for people who don't know, I do cards at hand at the Pro Tour, so I'm literally standing behind the players while they're playing in the feature match area. So I get an up-close and personal view of the Pro Tour, which, by the way, it is amazing to watch these guys play through an entire game while I watch them. Like, you realize, like, how good they actually are. You know what I mean? You're just like, Jesus Christ. Like, it's like, you know, because I'll make plays I don't get, you know?
Yeah, all the times where you're just like, where that seems weird. Like, why would they do that? And then 2 turns later, like, oh, yeah, I would have gotten blown out by that card.
I'm the dumb one. Like, you see them timing stuff perfectly. Like what's the name of the one? I literally just blanked on his name.
Ikawa.
I almost wanted to say Utah. I was like, that's not correct. Yeah. Ikawa won. Like, watching him play, I was like, this guy is just like, you could tell he was just a step ahead. Anyway, hearing the players talk about it, like, a lot of the players that were playing Esper, they weren't super excited about it. They were like, yeah, like, With the turnover being so fast with this new set coming out, I heard multiple teams talk about, like, we had ideas for cool decks, and we didn't have time. Like, you know, you saw the black-white caustic Bronco deck kind of make a splash. It did really well this week, even though it just missed top 8. Like, the record it put up was really good. I saw multiple teams talking about it. They're like, yeah, we started to, find this deck, but we didn't find the black-white version. We were on, like, black-green, black-red, and, like, we couldn't make it work. Or, like, we were just, like, whatever. And they said if they had one more week, you know, a few more days, they probably end up, like, playing completely different decks. Because even, I remember I heard, like, Arna, who, like, top 8ed with Esper, he was just like, yeah, the no good matchups deck. Like, he was, like, joking about his own deck. He's like, I don't have, you know, good matchups anywhere. It's just, like, the deck's good, you know? Like, it's just, like, jumped. It's like, well, I can technically beat anything.
Yeah, the 45 percenter. And you often do see that deck as a default when players are short of time, don't have, you know, haven't found anything else they really like.
Yeah, you're comfortable with it. Yeah. You, like, own the cards, which is a big thing. So that was another thing this weekend. So there were no vendors at this event. This event felt, well, you seem surprised. I wasn't. This was close to the public. It was the strangest Pro Tour I've ever been to in the terms of that there's just nobody in the room other than the competitors and, like, 25 people. There's, like, WotC employees and guests. Like,
even then, there's usually one or two vendors there that are specifically there to, like, supply last-minute cards to people.
So what happened was they made a deal with 2 companies, remember, right? And the players were told, like, if you need to make cards, you have till this moment to get cards through them, and they will be there at the beginning of the Pro Tour. And so, like, one of the companies, you know, shipped a bunch of stuff up, and I think one of the other companies literally sent a physical person who, like, had all the stuff. It was, like, you know, handing stuff out on, like, Thursday or whatever, or Friday morning, or however it was, which would be hectic as hell and, like, nerve-wracking, but that's how, you know, this was very last
minute.
If that
promise was made to me and I didn't have the cards on Thursday night, I would be so nervous, and I'd be kind of angry because those nerves would make it more difficult for me to get a good night's sleep.
Yes. No, absolutely. That's a really good point, because I'm the same way. Like, someone made this joke once. It's like, I've never won more matches of the Pro Tour than hours I've slept or something like that, you know, whatever. And I was like, yeah, that tracks, you know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was sweet overall. I forgot where where we started this part of the conversation, where we're supposed to go. But yeah, like, the deck choice is like, it wasn't 30% Aspro because Aspro was that good of a choice. It was just, I think it was familiarity, comfortability, and, you know, the winner choosing Domain showed, like, I mean, I don't know if you see that matchup play out. It is not good for Esper. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, he 3-0'd Arnie in the semifinals, so on full display there. And
yeah, and Arnie played well at a lot of spots too, like really well to even be in the games as well. So yeah, and those can take a while. Like, the Esper mirrors were rough, like doing, you know, hand cams and stuff for that, like keeping up was difficult or whatever. But
yeah, especially overall, when they are what's the
connive,
the triggered ability with Rafine,
conniving.
Yeah. So their hands are just changing over and over and over again.
So like, yeah, because I try to keep up with every single card, right? So they connive for one or two, and be like, oh, add these two, and you can see the two that go out. If that's live on screen, you'll see it happen. But like, one person connived for like five, I just emptied their hand. I literally just took their whole hand off, and I was like, I'll get. Whenever they're done, I'll redo the whole hand, you know, kind of thing. And, yeah, I mean, it was really sweet. I didn't get to see the Caustic Bronco deck up close, but, like, I kind of want to just go, like, fire up Arena and play with it because it looks really cool. The guy that did really well with it, Kevin Ansel, I actually was on a Pro Tour team with him years and years and years ago. The guy's a really underrated player.
He's
very good. What, that I was on a Pro Tour team? I think this was like Spain. I think this is when I met Brennan DeGandio. Like, it was actually that event. So that's how long ago it was.
What song was playing when you first met?
I'm not sure. I know there's a video somewhere of all of us. We're drafting, and I didn't know anyone was. I think Calcado filmed it secretly. We're drafting, and we just have 22 by Taylor Swift blaring, and everyone's singing it. It's like that. It's like that Tommy Boy moment where, like, nobody wants to sing the song, and then they both are just belting it out. Like, everyone is belting out, you know, I don't know about you. You know, we're all, like, singing the refrain or whatever kind of stuff.
Was there that one moment where you and Brennan just kind of locked eyes across a crowded room, and it felt like you were the only two people there?
No. So, the thing was, I think the quickness of this, we'll give a flashback episode for, like, 10 seconds. The quick rundown is this. Brennan, like, knew me through a friend. It just showed up in Spain with nowhere to stay for the Pro Tour. So typical Brennan.
Yeah.
And like, I ran into him and I was like, oh, like, I know you. Yeah. He's like, you know, like, we have this good mutual friend. My friend's like, you know, I'll vouch for him. And he's like, I have nowhere to stay. And I'm like, all right, just come with me to my apartment and we'll figure it out. Cause we had a huge apartment rented with like, you know, four or five bedrooms. And he just chilled. And then he and I just hit it off immediately. And like, we kind of like, it wasn't like a weird team thing, but we just, you know, we would be testing together a lot. Like, we would draft together on his laptop and stuff a ton and talk through things and stuff. And like, we just hit it off. You know, like, there's certain people you gravitate towards in the game more because you understand each other better.
Yeah.
You just, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. You just get along. You speak the same language, quote unquote, in the game, et cetera, et cetera. And so, like,
too
bad
he didn't have the sultry long hair back then.
Yeah. He was way more, he had like the almost emo, like, short hair, you know, like the whatever. Anyway, he's still gorgeous back then. I remember that. Yeah, the emover. Yeah, is that what you said? The emover.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
I've never heard that before. That's fucking. I've got a little bit of an emover going right now.
That's what they called it in Rock Band when you could adjust your on screen singer's hairstyle.
Okay, so that's what it is, because I didn't play Rock Band, remember? But
yeah,
speaking of that, I'm about to cut.
You were very cool in 2007.
I was like playing poker and doing magic and like doing other stuff and like living in Las Vegas. I don't remember, but whatever. Yeah, I definitely wasn't playing Rock Band.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to say it was bad. I just wasn't playing video games.
I was playing Rock Band in my dorm room.
No, so like, I remember at some point in time. Yeah, I remember at some point in time I was like big into video games. Then like I started working for like EA and doing like game testing like early on some games. Hated the job, quit, and then like didn't play a video game for like a decade. It, like, completely soured the whole experience. I mean, didn't own a console, nothing. You know, I play some on a computer. So anyway, let's get back to this. But, yeah, I think the results of the Pro Tour were pretty cool overall. You know, like, pretty diverse. And besides, we have, like, what, one upcoming big event for Standard, which I think the RC in Dallas is Standard, right? Is confirmed?
They've now made the RCQ and RC align in format.
Okay, sure.
I'm pretty sure. So the upcoming RC should be Standard.
And then we get a huge shift in the Standard, because I don't know the exact date, but I know it's coming soon. We get rotation for the first time since
I assume that still comes in the fall.
I'm not sure. I saw somebody talking about it today. What is the guy who runs MTG Goldfish? I literally just blanked on his name. I'm horrible today.
Saffron
Olive. Yeah, Saffron Olive. He was tweeting about it today. Give me 1 second. But he was telling this because it's the both Innistrad sets, Kamigawa and New Capenna are all gone. So you're seeing almost every deck in Standard axed, like all of them. So we're going to get a complete new format for Standard, which this is where I'm going to start getting excited about Standard. A lot of this is kind of old to me, and I don't think that's a bad thing. A lot of people are really liking Standard overall. I don't love the three-year thing because I like Standard to be a little more or a little less stale, I think is the right way to put it. You know, I saw this much Esper, I was like, dude, I did the World Championships a year ago. That was the last time I remember being, you know, doing a bunch of Standard at the Pro Tour. And like, I was like, it's just the same decks. Like, just Domain versus Esper. And, you know, even though there was a bunch of changes this year, you know, I definitely like overplayed that in my mind. I'm excited for that. Though, I'm going to see where people go with this information. Because like, now they're going to have time to work on a few of the new decks that we saw and see how much that changes things. You know, how much are people going to play Domain? Because, okay, let's sort of dive into this a little bit, because this is a question you and I talk about. I think you and I talk about every time. Is Domain actually good in Standard, or do you think this is just a really good meta call for this exact, you know, small tournament? Because this is one of the smaller Pro Tours ever as well.
Yeah, 207, I think.
Yeah, it was. The room felt very, like, it didn't feel empty. It just felt very tight. You know
compact.
What I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, if 30% of the room is playing Esper and your deck is very good against Esper, you know, as long as you're at least serviceable against the other 70%, you're in very good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so there, that's a big question. Like, what happens if Esper drops down to 10 or 15% of the metagame, which, you know, based on what you heard from the players and the results of the event, seems pretty likely. You know, there's a lot of decks that did well. Esper didn't have a great weekend. You know, still a powerful deck. Rafine is, you know, obviously a great card. It's been a staple its entire time in Standard, but this is doesn't seem like, you know, like anything close to a juggernaut or maybe not even a tier one strategy. So, you know, Standard especially has been, it's been very important to metagame for it because it tends to change, you know, maybe not week to week, but month to month, definitely. And sometimes, you know, week to week, you know, and you know, as the, you have to take into account those small shifts. It's not just, you know, it's not like Modern where we've had, like, you know, we've had Rakdos, Gog, and Amulet, and, you know, Leyline Domain decks be, you know, the top four decks for the entire time since Violent Outburst was banned, and they just kind of, like, take turns slightly. You know, you do see decks rise and fall, you know, pretty significantly in Standard, so I personally would expect a pretty significant drop from Esper, and that definitely makes Domain ramp a lot worse. And then you also have to account for, you know, we've got, what, like a month or two before the RC? Like, how much does that give people time to explore all these new strategies that they didn't have time to for the Pro Tour?
I think it's going to give us a lot of time, and you're going to see people, like, you're going to see somebody do really well at the RC, like, probably top eight, at least one person who you can tell put in the time and effort. And they're going to have, like, something cool or slightly different, you know, like some different build of something, or just, you know, a better, like, not saying it wasn't good, but a better version of Cossack Bronco or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're going to have some deck that's going to carve up the field. And they're going to be like, yeah, I just put in a lot of time and effort and it paid off, you know, this weekend kind of thing.
You know, I almost, it's almost, given, you know, all the good things that I heard, especially, you know, the gameplay was a lot of the praise for the format, which, you know, I often find that, you know, one of two things to be true of any given Standard metagame. It's either a metagame where there is very good gameplay, but the metagame itself is unbalanced, and that was true this weekend. You know, Esper was 30% of the metagame, but the gameplay was great. Or you have a very balanced metagame, but people don't really like the gameplay. And,
okay,
you know, hopefully we end up, you know, moving into more of a best of both worlds, which has happened also throughout Standard's history at various times. You know, I think basically from, like, Cons to Kaladesh, like that 3-year window, because I think Cons is 2014 and Kaladesh is 2017. Standard was basically good the entire time. And then Kaladesh ruined everything because artifact blocks are terrible.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. North Carolina always plays the artifact decks. kooky artifact deck guy, Lee McLeod.
Lee McLeod, yeah. I was just about to say, like, Lee McLeod, my favorite tweeter of all time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. So, yeah, apologies to Lee saying artifact blocks are bad.
You know what's funny? Because he actually listens to the show, and now he's going to be like, well, I got name dropped, but...
in, like, the most insulting way possible.
Dude, look, I must have rubbed off on you this morning. I say this morning, it's 1:05 p.m., but I'm still, like, recovering, and I'm like, I'm on West Coast time still, because I spent a week in Seattle.
Yeah,
and,
like, it doesn't get any easier.
My brain's not all there. I haven't had caffeine yet today. Like, Ross can see me, I'm a mess. I've shaved, my hair is all over the place. Like, which, by the way, I think all of this is going away soon. I've been letting this girl out for like months. I think I'm over it.
Go for it.
No comment. Just no comment. Mm. Cool.
Go for it. You know, live your life. You know.
Yeah, you do you. Yeah. Soon. Right? but yeah, did anything really surprise you from the Perth War this weekend?
No. Like every deck in the top eight is something that you would have expected, like maybe Azorius Control, just because I'm always surprised when Azorius Control does well.
But it's Yuta.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Every time Control does well, you just look at the pilot and you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Every time I see it in Modern, it's always Raja Suleiman, because he just loves blue-white control in Modern. Yep. And I'm like, that makes sense. Probably just outplayed his opponents by a country mile 90% of the rounds that he played. Still lost two of them because his deck is horrible. Mm-hmm. But everything else is just normal standard stuff.
If we talk about Yuta's deck for a moment too, I think it was actually pretty cool. Like, I got to watch it quite a bit, and you know, you and I talked about this. He had two of the new modal cards put into his main deck that we talked about quite a bit. You know, it's weird to say this. He had four copies of Three Steps Ahead, which I talked about. Like, is this possibly the best cancel variant we've ever seen?
Yeah,
and it is.
I agreed. Yeah.
It is, and it was pretty awesome to watch him play it. So we can, like, I watched him play this cancel. I watched him just, you know, draw some extra cards when he needed to. Also, Phantom Interference, he had that, which is, like, kind of an upgrade to Make Disappear, though. He had one Make Disappear, because it just, like, gives you options. Because,
well, I would say, like, Make Disappear is going to be better in a lot of different decks, but...
Mm-hmm. Not in this one where you don't have any creatures to sacrifice, yeah.
Yeah, like, you have the Wandering Emperor, which is great with Make Disappear, but that being the only thing, and so Nirex. not having to enable Make Disappear opened up a different angle of building the deck for Yuta.
Yeah, Mirex is, like, another thing as well. Again, multiple copies of Mirex, but, like, whatever. You know what I mean? It's, like, not...
Yeah, like...
That's a lot of mana.
You're not activating Mirex on turn four so that your mana leak on turn five works. that's not how this goes. You got to cast that Memory Deluge.
My favorite is, I'm looking at his deck on the main Magic, you know, .gg site, and, like, going through his sideboard and stuff, and whenever I put my cursor over Boonbringer Valkyrie in the sideboard, which I know what it is, it's, like, the angel variant thing... It just brings up Emery of the Lock for some reason, and a special version of Emery of the Lock. And I'm like, that's not the standard. And, like, why would this be in a cyber? I'm like, oh, does he just bring in this, like, you know, this 1/2 to block or something? Because, like, I don't know. I'm just joking, obviously. But yeah, like, I heard multiple teams. I remember Jim Davis tweeted about it, that his team had, like, a bunch of really cool ideas they had to leave on the table. That he said, if, you know, hey, if we had a few more days, maybe a week, we could have played something really cool, something really different. And, you know, they didn't. And...
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, but, like, I think it's fine. Yeah, this is kind of what happens with Standard once you get to, like, the end of the cycle. You know, like, towards the end of its, like I said, we're about to rotate soon, so we're at the end of, like, this is where you're gonna have... Okay. Did you hear the number of individual cards that were, like, available in the Standard format or whatever?
It was a little over 1,000, right?
It's, like, 3,000.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's... Someone was talking about this weekend, the number is astronomical, right? But...
Oh, yeah.
We've found
that makes way more sense.
Yeah, we found the really powerful cards, the really powerful strategies, and what happens towards the end of life in Standard a lot of times is, if this deck is very powerful, right? Like, yeah, you have Esper, you have Domain, these decks that are, like, already made. When the new set comes out, unless something is so good in the new set, whatever the good cards are, you're like, oh, this is a good card for, like, in blue, white, or black, like, we'll fit it into the Esper deck if it fits. Or, hey, there's a new ramp spell, we'll put it in Domain. You know, that kind of thing. So you're going to see that happen a lot more towards the end of life as well, these events, I mean, these formats. So I'm not surprised that we didn't see anything, like, truly, you know, crazy happen with, like, the new stuff. You know, there's not a huge... Also, like, getting rid of blocks means that the synergy decks are a little less likely.
That's always been true. And we've seen that play out for like 7 years. It's kind of unfortunate. And
agreed.
It's been particularly bad for aggressive decks because it feels like every single set has different creature types emphasized and payoffs for those creature types, but there's never enough for any of them to make a deck. Like Knights was kind of a thing like 5 years ago when they were in standard with Embercleave, but like they weren't that good. And as the format got bigger, they fell away. And you know, we really just don't see a ton of aggro decks in standard these days. Like Boros Convoke, I guess, is the only one right now that is doing particularly well. Like the Legends deck is like, yeah, it has a bunch of creatures, but it's not that aggressive.
Yeah, and I would like to see aggressive decks kind of come out. You know, we saw Boros Convoke do okay, but like every deck has decent answers to it. We'll see what happens when the format rotates and there's a lot less cards available. There's definitely a chance that like, you know, some aggressive deck comes out. So we'll see. But, you know, a lot of those decks are going to look very different with a lot of these cards going out. So I think overall, though, you had a pretty decent like overall arcing thing in the top 8, right? Like you had like one true aggro deck because you had one Boros Convoke, and then you just had like a bunch of the, you know, you had the weird deck, which is like you had multiple 4-color Legends. And when I say weird, it's just like it's combo, I guess, is the easiest way to put it. Then you have like the true control decks with like Azorius Control, and then you have like the mid range decks of like Esper, and then you have the other combo deck with Teemer Analyst. Which that deck was awesome, by the way. I don't know if you've seen those
creature
decks play
combo
out.
Versus ramp combo, but we saw some of the teamer deck Todd and I did when we were at Apex last for that team event. May French was playing it in the standard seat for her team, and this deck was sweet.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It felt really powerful when I was watching it play out too. Like with all the decks, like it's got a lot of life gain, incidental life gain. I didn't realize how good just World Soul's Rage for like 2 on turn 3 or 4 is, and like getting 2 lands back, and all of a sudden you're just like so far ahead of it. You're like, okay, kill your creature or just dome you, whatever. Gain the 2 life off the 2 little, I guess we can call them fetch lands, the standard fetches.
Yeah.
By the way, hardest part of my job the entire weekend was keeping up with which one of those was in their hand, because I didn't know. I know them now, but I didn't know them like ahead of time. And then some of the players had them in non-English, and I was like, thankfully, the program we use uses art. So I got to like look at the art, and I was like, I started getting to where like I could recognize them off art. So that helped a lot. Because lands are the hardest part of the job. Because lands look like Esper is extremely difficult.
Because all the blue lands look the same. You're like, I know it's one of the Azorius lands, but
you can only generally see like 10% of their hand. Like you can only see like 10% of the card, and then they shuffle them a lot and they're moving it. I'm like, I think that's a Caves of Koilos, but it could be a Concealed Courtyard. I'm not sure. Anyway. Anything else you wanted to say about standard before we get into these really cool spoilers?
I feel bad for people who watched it, you know, this weekend and saw the cool decks and were like, yeah, like I want to get into playing standard because the standard environment just hasn't been emphasized that much, which I think is strange for this format that WotC has, you know, publicly announced they are trying to push and get back into the forefront. And they've done a little bit for it. You know, we have the standard RCQ season earlier, and now we got the Pro Tour. But you typically want those things in reverse order.
Sure.
You want the big marquee event to set the metagame and get people excited, and then give them a bunch of opportunities to play. And we ended up getting them in the wrong order.
So I agree with that. I think overall it's been a success. I think you have overall, like, Standard was, for all intents and purposes, dead. Like, I don't want to say that it was literally dead, but for all intents and purposes, it was just, like, people weren't playing it, people didn't like it, the sets weren't fun. And then, I mean, I hear way more positivity. Like, I'm talking, like, 10-to-1 positive remarks on negative versus negative now on Standard lately. And we'll see what happens with the rotation or whatever, but, like, yeah, man, like, I think they did a really good job last year, and they'll probably do a better job of this in the future of, like, making sure, okay, look, we're going to showcase Standard, which they're doing a decent job now, right? Like, they're showcasing Standard this weekend. You know, they added, like, just think about if we didn't have this Pro Tour, because we weren't going to have it originally, right? This is the one that got added in, which is why it was closed, there was no con, and now we have, you know, we had the RCQ season, we had the RC coming up. Like, I think they've done a very good job for how close the turnaround on it had to be, you know, because, like, remember, WotC is usually like multiple years in the future. Like, I'm not trying to say some time traveler thing, it's just like they're already on sets that we're not going to see for like a year and a half. You know, like this MH3 set we're about to talk about, they worked on this quite a while ago.
Yeah.
But,
you know, this just goes to show that Watsy has that power. You know, we saw this play out with Pioneer a couple years ago, too. They left Pioneer for dead, you know, during lockdown, and they were pushing all the arena formats, except everybody's playing remotely, and nobody played Pioneer for 2 years. It languished with, you know, Inverter around for way too long, and all Watsy has to do is feature that format in major tournaments. You know, make it an RCQ season, make it an RC, make it a Pro Tour, and as soon as you put the format in the limelight, people will find decks and strategies that they like to play, and they'll find enjoyment in it. So it's never, you know, it's never really the format's fault. It's always the people who are, you know, setting the terms of the tournaments that we play. We will play whatever format they make us play. The next, you know, RCQ season was Pauper, we'd all start getting into Pauper.
I mean, I'm in for that, by the way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I am too. So
your wife would be so excited.
Yes, but I am glad that we're getting Standard, because Standard does have a very different feel than Pioneer or Modern. You know, it's a lower powered format. You get to, you know, really sort of play games where you're not dead by turn three so as often. And, you know, maybe you can stumble a little bit. Sometimes Standard doesn't let you do that, but you can, you know, really like sink your teeth into a game and have a nice back and forth, whereas older formats is often just, you know, who has come out on top in the first three turns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay, I can definitely get behind all that. So overall, Pro Tour, a pretty big success, I think, personally. He was also.
I don't know if I've ever seen such a positive reaction on Magic Twitter. Ever.
Yes. we usually don't agree on anything, and usually all doom and gloom, but it was pretty positive overall. I will say this. I'm amazed that somehow every show I go to and work is better than the one before, because at some point you just hit a ceiling, right? And like, you know, Rich and all the guys that are putting this together, the crew with React and stuff that I work with all the time, Reaction, and then the actual casters and the booth and the desk and all them, like, man, they're just so good at their jobs. Like, I just mostly just try to stay out of the way when I'm there. I'm like, look, I know my job. I'm one of those people, like, I don't need to have hands on at all. I'm like, just give me my headset, give me my iPad, let me go for the rest of the day.
Let me go to work.
Yeah, let me go to work. I'll do my work, and then as soon as I'm done, I go hand myself in and go home, because I'm dying physically. Like, I think I may have told you, my average day is about 12 to 14 hours, and I'm standing for most of it on concrete. It's not that bad if I get to move around, but I don't get to move around a lot. And so the first thing that I usually do is I go turn my stuff in, I run back to my hotel, and then run the bath as hot as it possibly can, and I just soak in water for like 30 minutes to kind of like, you know, alleviate like my hamstrings, my knees, my back, because I'm about to be 40, Ross. I don't recover the way I used to, you know, no. Even with being in the gym all the time. Like, it's really funny.
I don't want more miles on those joints.
Yeah, my best friend just started going to the gym because like he just got a new job and he just sits around a lot more. You know, he's like at a desk. He's like higher up in the company. And he's like, look, if I don't, he's like, I need to do something. So he started coming to the gym with me, and he's like, he used to do it back in like his 20s, and he's like, yeah, man, I just hurt when I wake up. I'm like, yeah, welcome to 40. You know, your body hates you, you know, kind of thing. Anyway, speaking of things I don't hate, let's talk about MH3 and these spoilers that came out. Fortunately, I guess, for us, but unfortunate for, you know, what was going on, there were some leaks of this stuff all getting online, and instead of just ignoring it, Watsy was like, okay, well, here you go. We'll give you a bunch of the cards. And Ross, some of the ones that we've seen a few mythics and a couple of rares, some of these look really powerful, or at least really good about talking. And for anybody who wants to know, we're looking on what is a Scryfall.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to follow along at home, and the very first one that we're going to talk about is one that we needed some reminder text on, even though we don't have it here. I might have to click on it.
This top row is all commander cards, so we could skip those.
Oh, sure. So Planar Nexus isn't actually in
Modern? Correct. Yeah, we don't have to worry about that. It does turn on Tron early, because apparently Tron checks subtypes, which I had no idea.
Yep, instead of
the names of the card, which I find ridiculous, but I don't have to worry, so I'm not going to care.
I'm going to skip the commander cards, and like you said, so the very first one, I think this one's really cool. Null Elemental Blast. There's a little bit of a theme here that you're going to see, where they're taking some cards from Magic's history, and they're making, this is an Eldrazi set, or at least has an Eldrazi theme, and they're making Eldrazi types up. So it costs a colorless mana. It's an instant. It says choose one. Counter target multicolored spell. or destroy color target multicolored permanent. Ross, correct me if I'm wrong, this seems like a really sweet sideboard card. And even possibly main deckable in the right deck in Modern.
Well, particularly important in Modern right now because of Leyline of the Guild Pact, right? So it's an easy answer to Leyline. It's good against the Leyline deck that plays a lot of other multicolored cards. And the, you know, I'm trying to think of other decks that play a lot of multicolored stuff. There's not a ton, right? Amulet.
The four-color deck, right? If, like, the four-color deck starts to make a comeback, some people still play it. You know, you have, like, Omnath, you have Teferi, a bunch of other stuff.
Ren and Six, yeah.
Ren and Six, so one mana. You can stop Ren and Six on the draw on turn two.
Yeah. Yeah, so against those decks, yeah, that sounds great. Like, once you get, like, three or four different high-value targets, and especially targets that are permanents, so you can get them on the stack or on the battlefield, you know, this should be a very effective sideboard card for you, so... Yeah, I expect this to, you know, make its way into maybe even Tron sideboards. You know, you cut some of the Karn targets because you want access to a couple of these in certain matchups, and, you know, other decks that can support the mana. I don't know, like, it's sort of hard to splash colorless in Modern because you can't fetch for like colorless dual lands, right? If they ever printed, like, you know, lands that have each basic land type and give you like red and a colorless or blue and a colorless.
You can't fetch for a pain land.
Yeah, exactly.
Which are technically tri lands. Yeah,
that would be an interesting set of lands for Modern to have. You know, basically an island that also taps for colorless, and so on. So without that, it's hard for me to see people splashing for this in a lot of different decks. But the decks that can already support it seems like a very strong sideboard card.
Yeah, absolutely. Next, we have another cute little card that we've made into an Eldrazi. Spawn Gang Commander. 3 red-red for an Eldrazi Goblin. It's devoid, and it's a 2/2. When you cast a spell, you create 3/0/1 colorless Eldrazi tokens that, you know, you can sacrifice to add a colorless. You can pay 1 out of colorless. You can sacrifice an Eldrazi. It deals 2 damage to any target. I don't know. See, this one worries me. Like, a couple years ago, when I say a couple years ago, maybe like 8 years ago, remember we had, like, Bant Eldrazi in Modern, and Eldrazi Temple was playable? Like, here's the thing. If there's enough colorless stuff in here, there's maybe the chance that one of these decks comes back, and then you'll have to see what color gets played in the deck. You know, if we play green, if we play blue, if we play red, if we play a combination of those, maybe it makes this card playable. But there's some matchups where this card might actually be playable because, you know, we played some pretty random creatures in those Bant decks, in those Eldrazi decks.
Yeah, especially if you're pairing it with white and you get to play this next to Eldrazi Displacer.
Mm-hmm.
I think without that, if you were like a Gruul Eldrazi deck, I'm not as interested, but if you're Boros or Naya, it could make some sense. You know, you get access to a bunch of extra colorless mana. It could be good with emerge creatures, which I suspect we will see several of.
Yes.
There's some possibilities, but I would say it's a long shot, and this card is going to exist much more in limited than in constructed. Yep. It seems absurd and limited.
Next, we have a good sideboard card that needed to be reprinted, by the way. Like, getting copies of this for Legacy was very annoying and hard. Meltdown, X and a red sorcery, destroy each artifact with mana X or less. I think this is kind of big, by the way, that we're getting this, because we are starting to see artifact decks and Affinity and stuff like that start to come back in Modern, even though this isn't great against, like, 7 drops in a red deck. But just, if those artifact decks come back, this card, you know, casting it for 1 or 2 against certain decks sometimes gets you as many as, like, 3 or 4 permanents on turn 2.
It's also very, very good against Urza Saga tokens.
Yep.
You know, can just, for 2 mana, can clear up everything, including the artifact they search for if it's a 1 mana artifact. I expect this will be a very strong sideboard option that, you know, there's a lot of different artifact, you know, removal spells that people play. We've come a long way from the days where people, like, splashed for Ancient Grudge because it was that much better than every other option.
So good. Yeah, the card was so good.
Yeah, and they were, like, bringing it in against Birthing Pod because Birthing Pod was so important they needed to kill it.
Yep.
But Meltdown, I think, is among the best that, you know, has existed, in particular because of the way it cleans up Urza Saga tokens. And that, as somebody that plays a lot of Urza Saga in Modern, I'm not happy about it.
Yeah,
I suspect I will be on the wrong side of this quite a bit. Yeah. Though, maybe not. Maybe if I start playing some more prowess decks, which I've been liking.
Slickshot's pretty sweet, but
yeah, and this card is very good in those decks.
Mm-hmm. Up next, we have a really cool bear. Kudo, king among bears.
That's just a cool bear. The king of bears.
No, he's a king among bears.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Sorry. It's green, white for 2/2 legendary creature bear. It says other creatures have base power and toughness 2/2 and are bears in addition to their types. So, Ross, I actually think this card is sneaky good. Not only does it shrink your opponent's creatures, but like I saw someone talk about this earlier today. They're like, what if you're playing like Infect or something with this card? I'm like, oh, holy shit. Like, that's actually pretty good, you know, in creatures like that, like, you know, Toxic, Infect, anything like that. And like, in the right matchups where creature size matters, this card could be really, really good.
Yeah, clearly, you know, once you level out creature size, that, you know, then quantity is what matters. It's just all about spewing the battlefield. So anytime, anything that is going to let you go wide with this card is, it's going to be effective with. And especially when you're, you know, there's a lot of token generators that make like 0/1 tokens that aren't supposed to be that good. Like Nissa, Voice of Zendikar. Mm-hmm. You know, when you turn that card into something that suddenly just pluses to make a 2/2, you know, it looks a lot better. And Nissa, Voice of Zendikar also minuses to pump your team. So now you have a bunch of 3/3s and they have a bunch of 2/2s and combat becomes basically impossible for them. I'm not sure it's good enough for Modern. Because it's still just like on a 2/2, so
yeah.
There's just so much good removal. It's hard to build, like, this is very clearly like a build around card, mm-hmm. but it's hard to build a deck that is depending on keeping a grizzly bear on the battlefield. There's way too many answers for it in Modern. I think it would have been a lot more interesting to see this card in like Pioneer. Maybe you could have built some sort of like Celestia token, you know, Convoke deck, and gone off with it. But Modern, I just, I'm mad because it's a cool build around, but I just don't think it's going to be a worthwhile one.
Up next, we have a really cool card, a little play on words as well, and an homage to a card that at one point in time in like Modern was actually pretty good, Ross. We have White of the
Modern. It was good in Legacy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Rite of the Reliquary. It's black and green for a Zombie Knight 2/2 with Vigilance. It gets +1/+1 for each creature card in your graveyard. And then you could tap it and sacrifice another creature, by the way. Big point. Another creature. Search your library for a land card and put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. This card seems like it might immediately go into something like Yogg or something like that. Like lots of really cool, or like some kind of black sacrifice. People talk about Bloodgast of this card is really, really, really good.
Yeah, Bloodgast is the one that intrigued me. Yeah.
Dryad Arbor. You can go get, you know, food and fodder for a bunch of stuff. Yeah, someone might do something pretty cool with this card.
Yeah, and the vigilance on it, I think, is really key, because the thing with Knight of the Reliquary that made it a little awkward is, you know, you wanted to take advantage of the ability, obviously, and get that utility, but you also, you know, after a few turns of that, had this really big body. So then you were suddenly tasked with trying to figure out, oh, do I want to just attack with this at this point, or do I want to keep using the ability? Usually, you do in Legacy, especially, I just wastelanded my opponents 2 or 3 times, and then, you know, then I started attacking them. So it wasn't that hard to figure it out, at least when you had something as powerful as Wasteland to find, or you were, you know, setting up the Dark Depths combo more recently. Here, you get the best of both worlds. You know, once you set it up as a 4 mana, you know, as a 4/4 or 5/5, then you can start attacking with it, and the entire time you can continue to keep using it. The only thing that worries me is that one of the things that really helped Knight of the Reliquary was with fetch lands, you could play it and it would be a 4/4 immediately a lot of the time. You know, I remember specifically, you know, playing like fetch landed a Noble Hierarch into fetch land plus Knight, and you suddenly had this 4/4 that survived Lightning Bolt, and that was huge. Here, the white, which you obviously want to cast on turn 2, it's unlikely to be significantly bigger than a 2/2. Even if you play something like Stitcher Supplier, which would, you know, be a pretty good card to have in your White of the Reliquary deck, on turn 1, you mill 3 cards. You know, if you're playing 30 creatures in your deck, which is pretty high, you mill 1.5 on average. So you've got something that's on average a 3.5, 3.5. Likely still, you know, a pretty good chance it's still vulnerable to Lightning Bolt. So that part of it worries me, but there's a lot to explore here, and it's definitely worth exploring.
I really like the idea of playing this along a Grist, since they curve really well into each other and play super well together. Like, I really like that.
Yeah, that sounds great. Can we get, like, I mean, it's going to end up just being a Yawgmoth deck, but, like, can we get a version of the Yawgmoth deck that has a good aggro plan?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that we've actually lost a little bit, you know, in the move away from all the extra undying creatures. You know, you don't have four copies of Snaggerugeist. You have 0-1 in the current builds. You don't have any copies of Dral's Messenger. They used to play like 3 or 4. They went down to 1 at one point. Now they just, you don't see any. You know, can White of the Reliquary really bolster the deck's aggro plan? That could be a pretty significant boon. And it's another card that plays really well with, you know, the one, the busted one, the artifact, Agatha's Soul Cauldron.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So it's like, what if all my creatures got to do this?
Yeah.
And I'll just search for all of my lands.
Yeah.
And that might not sound like awesome to you on first glance, but like just getting that sort of landslide resource advantage where suddenly you just have like 10 mana in play, it makes all your cords incredible. Like you play Yawgmoth, you immediately draw a bunch of cards, you play them all. It'll play very well. It's a very mana hungry deck. Yeah, I think excited to see how that plays in Yogg. It would be cool to explore it in other shells, but I just can't imagine like a Golgari go wide sacrifice deck that isn't just a Yawgmoth deck. Because Yogg is that powerful.
I just see with this next card, a lot of homages to older cards that we want to print into Modern and maybe fix them or change them quite a bit. Next we have a Winter Moon. Two colors mana artifact. Players can't untap more than one non-basic land during their untap step. This is going to be pretty good against a couple of strategies in Modern and an okay sideboard card, I think, in some decks, too. But, like, it's a little slow, but, like, it's good against, like, the big mana or just the mono non-basic land decks.
Yeah, you often don't play this on turn two for people that haven't played a lot with Winter Orb. You know, you usually played Winter Orb on as, like, a part of a double spell turn on, like, turn four. When your opponent was tapped out and you were ahead on board, and now it's just really difficult for them to get back ahead or to get back to parity. And this card will do similar things, you know, obviously against a much smaller range of decks, but against things like, you know, four color Omnath or, the very, you know, most leyline binding decks, creativity. That's a big one because that deck plays like one basic. And really can't afford to like add more in if Winter Moon becomes a big deal. And it's obviously a very mana hungry deck. So I don't know like how much of a staple this card will be in sideboards because you need like multiple of those kinds of decks to be prevalent in the metagame at once. But I like, you know, I think this is a much more palatable way of punishing players' mana bases than something like Blood Moon. Especially because Blood Moon is only available to like, you know, a small subset of decks. So, you know, let's just punish people. The mana is so good. They don't know how good they have at Tannen. Mm-hmm. Back in my day, we couldn't just play any colors we wanted and not really care about it. So,
yeah, true.
You're going to get punished now.
Hopefully. Next one, another cool little callback. We have Null Drifter. Costs 7 mana. It's a creature Eldrazi Elemental. It's a 4/4. When you cast a spell, draw 2 cards. It has flying. It has Annihilator 1. So for people who maybe heard of rounds, it says whenever this creature attacks, defending player sacrifices a permanent. And then Evoke, 2 and a blue. You may cast a spell for its evoke cost. If you do, sacrifice the answer. So this is just Mull Drifter, but blue. I was trying to think to myself if I would play this in Tron. If on turn 3 it's good enough to just cast a 4/4 flyer with Annihilator 1 and draw 2 cards, and maybe it is, but I'm not sure. This card's really cool. It's going to be sweet and limited. Not so sure about Constructed.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm pretty skeptical. You know, like you said, maybe it's good enough. Probably not. Like Tron has to go very big with its threats. You can't really small ball people. Like maybe if like Eldrazi Tron pops up again with all the, you know, support it's obviously going to get in this set. That's more of a deck that would be interested in a sort of small ball threat that generates value. But I'm pretty skeptical. I think there's just way more powerful things to be doing at 7 mana in Modern.
Agreed. Next, we have a card from Legacy getting printed into Modern. We see this in lands decks before. Sylvan Safekeeper is coming to Modern. Ross 1 green mana for a creature human wizard. It's a 1/1. It says sacrifice a land. Target creature you control gains shroud until end of turn. Something that could work pretty well with one of the earlier cards, Rite of the Reliquary, that we previewed, and some things like that. It can help make sure that your Yawgmoth never dies to targeted removal in certain matchups. I could see this card getting played somewhere.
Yeah, so we see a decent amount of this in Legacy. It's usually protecting Merit Lage.
Mm-hmm. It's practically always protecting Merit Lage.
Yeah. That's
the predominant use of it. Yeah.
And so it's in those types of decks, and they usually have like Greens and Zenith or other ways to tutor for it. It used to be a part of Maverick back in the day. There's not really a deck that has as high leverage of a threat. Like you said, like maybe Yawgmoth, but are you really courting for this?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, I'm not sure.
And those decks are pretty mana hungry.
I could see a format where you'd want these in your sideboard, but like it matters how much spots it takes, etc. I'm not super high on that, saying I can see it showing up.
Yeah, it's possible. It's a very powerful card. It sort of shuts out their removal because it doesn't have to tap to use the ability, so you can use it right away. As long as you have like three or four lands in play, their spot removal is pretty bad at that point. So just that alone is pretty attractive. And we'll see, but I'm a little skeptical of all Ollie sure. Raid, without something as high value as Merit Lage to protect.
Is it Raid or Rade?
It's probably Rade, to be honest. I'm not sure.
So for people who don't know, Wizard used to run an Invitational back in the day, and it's kind of like what they do the World Champions now. If you want it, you got to make a card. This is Ollie Rade.
This is actually the very first Invitational.
First one?
It was not the first one printed, but it was the card printed for the winner of the first Invitational. Ollie had a bunch of like delays in getting his through, but he won the first Invitational with like some weird like spider deck. I think this is like back in like 96.
There's been a bunch in the history of Magic too, like Snapcaster Mage,
Water Thief, Avalanche Riders.
Yeah, there's just tons of them.
This one wasn't printed until Judgment, so it was after Shadow Mage Invul Trader. But they got it in eventually, and it's honestly like been one of the more heavily played ones.
Mm-hmm. It might have the most longevity besides Snapcaster out of like all of them. Because
Meddling Mage most too.
Yeah, Snapcaster get played the most in main decks out of all of them.
Yeah,
is what I'm thinking. But all right, how do you pronounce the first word of the next one?
I would go for Chthonian. I think it's a Cthulhu kind of thing.
Sure, that's what I thought. So the next one is a homage to another card that we've seen be pretty good in banned in certain formats. Chthonian Nightmare, one of the black enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you get 3 energy, Ross. We're bringing it back. You get 3 energy, and you can pay X energy, sacrifice a creature, return this to its owner's hand, and then return target creature card with mana value X from your graveyard to the battlefield, activate all its sorceries. So this is just recurring Nightmare, but with energy. So I don't know yet if this is going to be good. I think this card is very powerful. Recurring Nightmare was extremely powerful. In 2029 when we get the next energy set or whatever year, I don't know. That's not me, Watsy. If I did just guess that right, please don't send the FBI agent after me to remove me or the Pinkertons or whatever. It's just a joke. It's really powerful, Ross. I don't know.
I've seen a lot of hype for this card. Currently, it would be my pick for most overrated card. I'm not sure on that, but it would definitely be up there for me because I'm lower on it than most. So the way I looked at it, if you're playing this card to be a reanimation spell for some big threat, for Atraxa or Gristlebrand, something like that, it's worse than Garu's Vengeance or Persist if you're doing it with Archon, right? It's worse than either of those cards because you need to add cards to your deck to get energy, and there aren't good energy cards in Modern. Those cards haven't even seen play in Pioneer. For as good as energy was in Standard, they have not been good in any non-standard format. And there's a very good reason for it. They were good in Standard because they were the only deck that had good mana in a Standard environment that had very bad mana. They were pretty, costed well for Standard. Whirler Virtuoso, getting a 2/3 and a Thopter, or a Rogue Refiner getting a 3/2 and a card. Like, for 3 mana in Standard, that was fine. But in older formats, you get way more. I don't want to have to play a bunch of crappy energy cards in my deck to enable this one. Maybe there's like one or two you can get away with, maybe in a Rakdos deck you could play Harness Lightning or something like that. Or maybe you could play like Aether Hub, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I'm not going to go hard enough with other energy cards to where I'm consistently being able to recur seven drops with this card.
Yeah.
So to me, you're using it for value to recur like three drops or less.
Yeah, not and seeing
so,
it. Yeah.
So are we playing this in like a sacrifice deck to like get our pieces assembled? Is this recurring our Mayhem Devils that keep dying and things like that? Like I could see something like that going on because this is a power. Being able to just do this repeatedly is quite powerful. I've also seen players note that it's sort of a combo with Priest of Gix, right?
Ooh, okay.
But it is not just a two-card combo because you select targets before you pay costs. So you can't sacrifice a creature to pay the cost and also target that creature with the ability. So you need to have a Priest of Gix in play and a Priest of Gix in the graveyard, and you keep looping the two priests with Chthonian Nightmare. That's infinite mana.
Innate.
That's a combo available to you in Legacy. Priest of Gix, of course, not modern legal. We have instead the color-shifted version in Priest of Urabrask that is not going to work with Chthonian Nightmare. So to me, this is like a value card in like a sacrifice deck, and I don't think that deck exists in modern. This would have been a really cool card in Pioneer, though. I kind of wish we had seen it in Pioneer.
Speaking of cool cards, this one's getting printed into Modern now from Legacy. Kappa Cannoneer. Yes, it is actually called Kappa Cannoneer. 5 and a blue for artifact creature, Turtle Warrior. It's a 4/4. It has improvised. It has ward 4. And then whenever it or another artifact enters the battlefield under your control, put a ++1 counter on Kappa Cannoneer, and it can't be blocked this turn. I think this is them actually fixing the wording as well on the card a little bit. So if I remember right, like I think the wording was a little ambiguous on the first version.
Yeah, well, they templated it like they used to template those cards where it just said whenever an artifact enters.
Yeah.
And newer players don't know that means the card triggers itself.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've been playing forever. We know.
We've seen a real attempt for Wizards to make artifact decks good again.
Yes.
And this is a very good high-end card, and it's a high-end card that you can probably cast as soon as, like, turn 3 in a lot of the versions of these decks.
And 8-cast is a deck that, you know, can really, like, wants this card. Like, it wants to play more high-impact cards.
Yeah.
It has been a sort of Tier 3 deck in Modern for a while. You saw quite a bit of it right after MH2 when people were, you know, digging Thought...
Courier?
Thought Monitor? No.
Courier?
Is it Courier?
Thought Monitor. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, Thought Monitor.
The draw two. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, the 7-drop. The Flying Thoughtcast. So I think Kappa Cannoneer is a great payoff for those decks. There's also the one, you know, from the recent set, the 3-drop, that makes constructs when you play an artifact. Like, so that deck has gotten a lot of additional juice. And I expect, you know, players will immediately put new versions of that deck together. And, you know, we'll see if it becomes a new, you know, entry into the modern metagame. I would not be surprised. I think these cards are powerful enough to push that, if not into Tier 1, into Tier 2 contention.
Also, another good card that works well, the card that we previewed recently was Synthesizer, that new Synthesizer that makes constructs. I think this card's great along with those. Like, you'll probably find some deck that has both of these in there if it can work out. You know, I'm not the kind of person to build that deck. I'm the kind of person that, you build it, I'll play it, because it looks great.
I've already seen some people post prospective lists of like a post MH3 8-cast deck, and I'm looking at them and thinking, like, I don't even know if I want these thought casts. Like, I think we need room for more artifacts and more creatures to enable better cards.
I mean, thought cast does help out with some of the most busted draws, but like, yeah, I see what you're saying there.
Yeah, like the synthesizers and the Kappa Cannoneer, like, you got to cut them for something. And I actually think this next card could also go into that deck. Maybe it's more of a sideboard card for them.
Yeah,
but
speaking of this next card, I think this is the one that I've seen the wildest delta between unplayable to very good. This one's Flare of Denial. It's 1 blue instant. It's counter target spell, so it's cancel, except you may sacrifice a non-token, very important, non-token blue creature rather than pay the spell's mana cost.
Oh, it's blue creature. Oh, I take it back. I thought it was just any non-token creature. I thought I could sack my Memnites and Ornithopters to it.
No. They made sure about that. No, you need to sacrifice an actual creature to this that costs you mana, most likely.
Yeah, that's just like...
And people... So here's the thing I think about this card. Obviously, cards like this are powerful and scary, right? You know, quote-unquote free spells. Like, we see what they've done to Modern. I think this one might not be as good as some of the people who are doomsaying it or saying. I think it might not be as bad as some of the people who are saying, like, it's unplayable. Is it? Because, like, originally we were like, oh, this is like a merfolk card, right? Like, you know, sacrifice, like, but what merfolk do you want to sacrifice? Like, it's pretty important that you keep your creatures around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It says non-token, it says blue, you know, it's very, very niche. Like, you have to sacrifice one of these things. Here's the thing, people are like, what are the blue creatures that we can sacrifice for value or like that are okay with sacrificing? Now you're diluting your deck with cards that aren't very good. If we play a bunch of these, you know, like, I wonder if there's like some kind of Delver variant that you could maybe start doing this with, you know, and I don't necessarily mean the card Delver here, just something along those lines, but you need to have enough blue creatures because casting this for 3 mana is not necessarily great, but in some matchups, it's probably fine. I think this card is a solid mid for me right now, Ross, and we'll see if a deck can really, it matters if there's a deck that can really take advantage of it.
Yeah, I'm lower on it than mid for sure. So here's the problem with this card. When you play pitch counters, you're playing them because the card disadvantage is worth the tempo advantage that you gain. You know, Force of Negation in their key spell, you know, when you're ahead on the battlefield and so on. So, you know, you're paying a material cost for a gain in tempo. And the way this card is structured, where you have to sacrifice a creature that you've already paid mana for, you are effectively sacrificing some of the tempo that you've already, you know, some of your development, and thereby losing tempo in order to cast this card. And so it would take a very specific situation for that to make sense. It's not going to be a card that I put into Merfolk as like a generically powerful effect. It's going to have to be a card that protects a very key threat that is enabled by other creatures that you play earlier. So the card that comes to my mind is Master of Waves. You play a bunch of cheap blue creatures, you cast your Master of Waves on turn 4, and then you counter their removal spell on your Master of Waves. And then you don't care that you've lost a creature because your Master of Waves generated a million of them.
Yeah, but now you have Master of Waves in your Modern deck.
It's a powerful Magic card, Tannen.
It still creates a problem that that card is in your deck. I don't care how powerful it is. I don't think that card is good in Modern. Is a problem.
Yeah. You know, if there's other cards that are more Modern appropriate that you could protect with it, maybe there's something to go on.
Sure.
Maybe you're playing this like Dimir, Chthonian Nightmare, Energy, Reanimator deck, and this like, you know, protects the creature that you reanimate. I think it's going to be a very specific context for this card to be good. So, it's not just a card that you play in your blue creature decks, because like the tempo advantage you gain from like countering their key spell without paying any mana is when you generate a tempo advantage with a spell like this, the actual advantage comes from like your next turn. What are you doing on it? And usually one of the key things you're doing is attacking them, like getting them dead.
Yeah, and you're attacking with a Delver of Secrets after you've dazed or force of willed your opponent.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Like dazing their spell when you don't have a battlefield set up is not very good. It's just a 1-for-1 trade. But when you have to sacrifice one of your threats to do it, you're making you're reducing the amount of advantage that it actually gains. So like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And like, so, usually the decks that are interested in that kind of tempo advantage aren't super threat dense. They're playing, you know, 12, 15 creatures or so, 25 spells. And so you have one, maybe two creatures in the battlefield. You certainly can't sacrifice the only one you have, like maybe if you have two. So, it's going to take a very specific context for me to want this card.
I agree with you 100%. Like you saying, it's a very specific context, because we're going to spend a little bit more time on this card because this is one of the most talked about ones. The next few are pretty easy. The way that I think about it is, for this to replace Force of Negation, you need a very specific thing to happen. Either A, Force of Negation is not stopping what needs to be stopped from your opponent, or they're playing around it too often of like doing stuff during your turn. So like, you can't Force of Negation for free and you have to leave up 3 mana and this is causing too much of a problem with your deck. Then maybe Flare of Denial is the type of thing that you would rather have because it checks more boxes. So that means you would need the problem for your deck or the reason for this card, which, look, I see this as a sideboard card more than I see it as a main deck card, unless we find the exact right build where this is always good. Because there might be a matchup where, hey, they're playing some creature spell or something like that. You know, they're doing something that I need Flare of Denial for that Force of Negation does not catch. And I need a few of these in my sideboard because I need to be able to shove on the first 1, 2, or 3 turns. And if something goes wrong and they have it, then I can use Flare of Denial to at least stop from dying, you know, that turn or losing the game. And then if not, Now I can just leave up three mana and like play from there. That also makes me wonder if we start having to build the decks a tiny bit different with this card in mind. Like having Flare of Denial in my deck makes me want to have Archmage Shard in my deck or something along those lines. Something where if I have to leave up three mana for it, I at least have some other option to play. If they don't play anything now, I can play Archmage Shard, draw two cards. That also starts to repair the card advantage loss out of Flare of Denial because you're 2-for-1-ing yourself a lot of the times for this. I mean, there's ways to get around that, but it's kind of like when we were playing Soul Tide Delver back in the day and we had Force of Wills and we left them in more matchups than we did with some of the other decks. And there were matchups where we wanted to leave him in, so we brought in him to Turok just so we could 2-for-1 our opponent after 2-for-1-ing ourselves and keep card parity around. And it was a very numerical way to think about Magic, but and Magic might not be that way as much anymore that it used to be in the past. It's no longer just 1-for-1 in Magic. A lot of these 2-for-1 yourselves are actually very good in Magic nowadays.
But it might be more important for a card like this because you're not able to counteract the card advantage loss with the tempo advantage as much because you have to sacrifice blue creatures so often.
That's what I'm saying. It's like you might need to make some concessions in deck building if you're playing this card. And then that's like, is it in my main deck? If it's not, then like you probably don't need to make as many concessions. So what I'm saying is you need the right situation for this card to be very good. And if the situation is a thing, then this card will be good. It will be playable in your deck. And look, I'm not above casting Cancel in Modern. I'm really not. You know, we've seen Force of Negation in a lot of matchups where like someone has a threat in play and they just like don't play anything because we have so many flash spells that are good in Modern and so many other free spells that are good in Modern. You know, like you can just pitch this to Force of Denial. You know, you can just pitch this to Subtlety if you have to and stuff like that. So like, I'm seeing this as more mid just because of the fact that it's a little it's a blue card. Like they're so you know, it's a blue card. It's like it's the old joke. In Legacy, I'm more willing to put a blue card in my deck because it pitches the Force of Will kind of thing. I'm not saying it's great. I'm not saying it's bad. We'll have to see how much it hits. And the fact that Force of Negation is in the format is, I think, a little bit of a hurdle for this card.
Oh, it's definitely a hurdle because the card is worse than Force of Negation.
Yeah, I think that's like pretty odd. Let's get that
out of the way.
Yeah.
Even in decks with a bunch of creatures in it, like, you still need blue creatures for this. Well, those are still blue cards for Force of Negation. So it's not like you're going to find a deck that enables this card, but doesn't enable Force of Negation. So then it becomes like, are there that many creatures in the format that you really want to counter? Or are you that interested in pitch counters that you want to play more than four? And you know, maybe the answer is yes to those questions. Obviously, countering Primeval Titan is really important, and countering Yawgmoth is very important, though sometimes Yawgmoth appears as a, you know, as a non-creature as well and gets Force Negation, but sometimes it doesn't, and so Flare of Denial can hit it while Force doesn't. So there are definitely creatures that are critical to counter, out of a lot of different decks, but I don't think this is just a, you know, slam dunk, put it in my Merfolk deck and call it a day.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go ahead and move on. We've been spending a ton of time on this. Another card getting printed into Modern that we didn't have before, Orange Chant, one white with a kicker of one white. It says, target player can't cast spells this turn. The spells creatures can't attack this turn. For anyone who didn't know, this was a huge thing back in the day when Isochron Scepter was a card that got played a lot.
You could pay kicker costs off of Isochron Scepter. So if you paid two casts off Scepter, then you paid the kicker. You sort of locked your opponent out of the game. It's way too easy to answer Isochron Scepter these days. You know, when people were playing that in Extended, there weren't any Abrupt Decays or, you know, Abrades and Colgan's Commands and Prismatic Endings and Leyline Bindings around. So, obviously, like, in decks that are sideboarding Silence,
this could be an upgrade or
this could be an upgrade. Yeah. I'm not sure. Does Silence target the opponent? I'm not sure on the exact working.
I don't remember. I think so, but this one definitely targets. So, that might be a thing to get around. I'm not 100%. Maybe it doesn't.
I think Silence says your opponents. Yes, your opponent. Maybe. So if you need to get around, you know, Leyline of Sanctity and Silence might be better, but in general, I would say Orm's Chant is better. Mm-hmm. Plus, you can go get cool Planeshift copies.
Yep. Next, we have my vote for cutest card printed in this set. I don't know if I'm going to be able to give up on that. We have a cool dog. How would you pronounce his name? Felia?
Yeah, sure.
Felia Exuberant Shepherd. One in a white for a legendary creature dog. It's got flash. It's a 2/2. Whenever it attacks, exile up to one target non-land permanent. At the beginning of the end step, return that card to the battlefield under control. If the card entered under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Felia. Ross, I actually think this card is really good and really powerful. I'm thinking possibly more Legacy than other things. I think this is something that couldn't show up in like Death and Taxes and that kind of stuff. I'm actually like thinking this might be a card. I don't know about Modern, but we'll see. This thing does some powerful stuff.
Yeah, Modern, I think there's just too many creatures around where it's hard to consistently attack freely with a 2-2 that has no sort of evasion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hadn't thought about it in Legacy. It honestly feels more viable there because there's not as many creatures around in combat. You can more freely enter the red zone. And maybe, you know, because this has two toughness, I know Death and Taxes has largely moved away from Flicker Wisp because it's just too easy to do with one toughness creatures these days. Like, maybe this is the way you get your, you know, your
Flicker Wisp at home.
Your cool flicking going on. Mm-hmm. Because it does target any... It doesn't target lands. That was one of the cool things with Flicker Wisp. So it's not quite as versatile, but, you know, it does a lot of cool stuff. Eventually becomes a big, you know, a big idiot. Sure. I could see it. I was ready to fight you on this one, but you've convinced me. I think it has some potential there.
Yay. It's also a dog. Like, come on. All dogs are great.
Next all up, good dogs brought.
Next up, we have what might be the most powerful card we've seen printed or previewed. This one getting a lot of reactions on the website. Ugin's Labyrinth. It's a land with imprint. So when Ugin's Labyrinth enters the battlefield, you may exile a colorless creature card of mana value 7 or greater from your hand. You can tap it to add a colorless. If a card is exiled of Ugin's Labyrinth, you can add 2 instead, so it becomes a soul land. And then you can tap it and return the exiled card to its owner's hand. So, Ross, what you could do with this card is you could play it on like turn 1, 2, or 3, whatever. It doesn't come into play tapped. Remove card, all is dust, Imrakul, something along those lines. Some big Eldrazi thing.
Yep.
Jump 2 mana. We could maybe do this multiple times. And then now that we have all the mana, you can get the card back later as well.
Yeah. After you've made a bunch of line drops and you don't need it to tap for 2.
Now, there are a lot of ways to interact with this in Modern. You know, we've seen a lot of Demolition Fields, et cetera, et cetera. If you're not worried about that kind of thing or someone interacting with your lands, this is really powerful.
Yeah. The only question to me is how many 7 mana colorless cards can you put in your deck?
Asking me or are you asking like a reasonable person? Because you know me.
even the big Tron deck these days is playing a much lower curve. They're playing the One Ring. They're playing Karn the Great Creator. You know, not as many Karn Liberateds and not as many Ugin the Spirit Dragons. So there's really not that many in the deck. Obviously, with this card in your deck, you're incentivized to build a little bit differently. You know, there's you know, Emerge and Evoke Eldrazi. We saw Null Drifter previewed earlier. The next card is Haragas. We'll get to it. Is an Emerge creature. So like those creatures can sort of artificially raise your count of cards that you can imprint with Ugin's Labyrinth. But the incentive is there. Lands it at 2 mana, incredibly powerful. You know, we went through this with Eldrazi before. It was the 2 mana lands that really made that deck busted. It wasn't, you know, Eldrazi Obligator and Eldrazi Displacer. It was, you know, being able to play 8 2 mana lands in your deck. And you know, this one feels a lot like Chrome Mox, but if it works to the best of its ability, it's actually just better than Chrome Mox. Because it gives you the extra mana, and eventually you recoup the card that you invested. So, if this card has a ceiling that is higher than a card that is currently banned in Modern, and while we've, you know, made fun of the ban list a lot in recent years, I think Chrome Mox is, you know, wisely still on the ban list. And is one of the cards that you see in the rare times we've had no ban list Modern events. Chrome Mox has been one of the key cards that you see in a lot of different strategies. So, this card, this is one of the cards that really scares me. And I think we all expected to have some of those cards that leapt off the page and are like, ooh, this one might be too good. This is the one that does it for me.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Haragast Erupting Nullkite. It's a 9 mana colorless card. Also, hey, look, we got a target right here. It has Emerge. You can pay 6 red. You may cast a spell based sacrifice and creature and paying the Emerge cost rather reduced by the creature's mana value. It says, when you cast a spell, you may exile your hand, if you do, draw 3 cards. As flying, then each creature spell you cast has Emerge. The Emerge cost is equal to its mana cost. This one's... it's too much. I don't see this one showing up in Modern unless someone has some weird combo thing with it. But this is a lot of mana, and it's going to cost a lot of mana, even with Emerge. Because you still have red, and I'm not seeing it. I'm sure someone might figure something out somewhere, but I think this one is just one of those blah cards, even though it is a mythic. Not all of them can be huge hits right away.
It seems hard to me to build around Emerge as a mechanic. Every time I know there was Teemer Emerge in Standard, but that was really just a deck that was built around the 8-drop, the 5-6. It had like a couple of Wretched Griffs in it too. Somehow I remember the name of Wretched Griff, but not the one Eldrazi Deep Dweller. That was a card, that deck that was like built around Deep Dweller. This you have kind of like, you're trying to like eventually emerge like an Emrakul to Aeon's Torn. That's the goal, probably. One of the other various Emrakuls that exists, or big Eldrazi. You could immediately emerge like a Kozilek if you have a mana sticking around. But is the hoops that you're going to have to jump through to do all that is probably just worse than playing Tron and like casting Tron cards. So
you're probably just right. Yeah,
like Tron is the default like big mana colorless mana deck in Modern, has been for a decade. So you got to prove to me that like trying to go build around this card is better than just Troning people. And like, sure, you could put Tron in your Emerge deck, like make it a variant of Tron, but like you're adding more hoops, and I don't like jumping through hoops. I'm old. My joints are failing, much like Tannen's.
Yep.
No hoop All jumping right. for us.
Speaking of old, here we go. Another one that's it's a new card, but it's kind of an homage to an old card. This is a Nethergoif. One black mana for a creature, Lurgoyf. It's a star / 1+ star. So it's Turmogoyf's power toughness to start.
Why do they go to the 1+ star template instead of star plus 1?
I don't know. Anyway, yeah, that's weird. It actually offends my eye. So I look at it.
Sometimes you might write it that way, but typically you would write a mathematical expression with the variable first.
Yeah, usually the variable comes first. Exactly.
Yeah, because your polynomials are in descending order. The constant term is just like an x to the 0 power, and the x term is x to the 1. So
yeah, I use words and sentences like this all the time in my regular day of talking.
You write polynomials in descending order of the exponents. So
Roth, let me read the card. No,
I don't. I don't like it.
I know.
Why would you do that, buddy?
All right, its power is equal to the number of card types among creature cards. I'm sorry. This is. Nurgoyf's power is equal to the number of card types among cards in your graveyard, and its toughness is equal to that number plus 1. So
is it just your graveyard?
Yes.
Oh, that's much worse.
And here's the other part. It has escape for 2 and a black. You can exile any number of other cards from your graveyard to have 4 or more card types among them. If you have some way to put a bunch of cards in your graveyard, I think this card is still playable, Ross. It costs 1 black mana to start as well.
Tarmogoyf is also 1+ star. Weird.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the text says is equal to that number plus 1. So the text is written in that order because I think that's pretty clear why they would do that. But then they just write the symbols in the other order. I honestly never noticed that. Granted, I haven't played a ton of Tarmogoyfs in my day. I was never a big Tarmogoyf guy. But I sort of glossed over this one because the text is so similar. I just assumed it was the same as Tarmogoyf. Why does it only check your graveyard?
It'd probably be too good. It's a 1-drop.
Yeah, like, I know.
If this thing was a 1-drop and it said both, I would slam. I think this card would be really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, Tarmogoyf is unplayable, but Tarmogoyf with escape and 1 mana less is probably might be too good. Who knows? The removals are so good in Modern that I just can't imagine creatures actually being that good.
Yeah.
Like, even with escape here, just fucking Solitude. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Prismatic
move
ending.
On.
You know, yeah, now my Prismatic ending is even cheaper. Great.
Yeah.
We'll just answer it. So
we'll just move on from life. Yeah, with all this stuff.
I'm not that high on this.
Is the next card part of this card dump, or is that where it ended?
These last 8 cards they had just been previewed a little earlier.
That's what I'm saying. Urza's Cave had already been previewed.
Yeah.
I can't remember or not. Okay, so that was it then. Okay.
Yeah, but we can get through these cards because we were waiting until we had more to do these.
Okay, sure. All right, so let's go through these pretty quickly. Urza's Cave, It's a land, Urza's Cave. It taps for colorless. You can pay 3 mana, sacrifice Urza's Cave, search your library for a land card, put it on the battlefield, tap, then shuffle. Seems fine if a deck seems really wants that kind of effect, but like it's a lot.
I look at this card and I think, oh, it like helps me assemble Tron, but it costs so much mana. Like you want to assemble Tron on turn 3.
This is a commander card.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like other decks that would like want that effect, and I just can't come up with it.
This one's pretty cool. We have a new waste. It's a basic snow land, so it's snow covered waste. Don't really have much comments on it until there's a reason to. You know, like I can't think of like the snow cover stuff.
But it's nice to have. Like you know, I still find it weird that waste is not a basic land type.
Yeah,
but whatever.
Interesting.
You do.
This is one of the big ones. It's going to be part of the art for the set. Emrakul, the World Anew, costs 12 mana for a legendary creature Eldrazi. It's a 12-12. When you cast a spell, gain control of all creatures target player controls. It has flying, protected from spells, and from permanents that were cast this turn. So you can't, like, play a Necrotal and kill it. When Emrakul, the World Anew, leaves the battlefield, sacrifice all creatures you control. And then it has Madness, where you pay 6 colorless. There's a lot going on here, Ross.
Yeah, it seems very good.
Seems very powerful. Yeah.
In particular, like the key thing here is that you just gain control of them, of the creatures permanently. So once they answer the Emrakul, you sacrifice all their creatures too. It's not like they get theirs back and you sacrifice all of yours. It doesn't completely undo it. So there's no real way to prevent the Emrakul from, you know, wrecking your board. Unless you're playing like the summary dismissal, like really expensive counterspell where you can get, you know, deal with the creature and deal with the ability, or you just stifle the ability, then use something else to deal with the Emrakul and you're still down a card. It seems like it's going to be really hard to Madness. I don't know how relevant that aspect of the card is, but just as a 12 mana 12-12 that basically wins the game if they don't answer it immediately, and even if they do answer it immediately, wraths the board, and presumably like you're not playing that many creatures and they are. I think it's very, very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you tell us what the next one is?
That is It That Heralds the End. One and a colorless for a 2/2 Eldrazi drone. Creature spells that you cast with mana value 7 or greater cost 1 less to cast, and other colorless creatures you control get +1/+1. Likely a part of any aggressive Eldrazi deck, but look, obviously just not applicable outside of them, but it's a nice thing to cast on turn 1 with your Ugin's Labyrinth, or with your Eldrazi Temple. So, like an aggressive Eldrazi deck like needed more 2-drops. You just had Mimic, so this is a nice other 2-drop. And like, maybe you're playing some expensive card at the top of your curve, or like an Emerge creature, and you have a second color. You know, there's ways to make the first ability also relevant. So, you know, definitely a card to try in those decks. Otherwise, it'll just be relevant and limited. Moving on to our last few cards, we've got Ajani Nakadal Pariah, one and a white for a 1/2 legendary cat warrior. When it enters the battlefield, create a 2/1 white cat warrior creature token, and whenever one or more other cats you control die, you may exile Ajani, then remove him from the battle, then return him to the battlefield transformed under his owner's control. The transformed side is Ajani Nakadal Avenger, a Boros planeswalker that starts with 3 loyalty. You can +2 to put a +1/+1 counter on each cat you control. You can 0 to create a 2/1 white cat warrior creature token. When you do, if you control a red permanent other than a Ajani Nakadal Avenger, he deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control to any target. And then each opponent chooses -4 to have each opponent choose an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker from among the non-land permanents they control, then sacrifice the rest. That's a lot of text, Tannen.
Okay. So the way I feel about this card, obviously it's powerful. When you look at it, you're like, this card is very powerful. Is there a spot for this in Modern? It is a 1/2 for 2 that makes a 2/1, right? You talked about how good removal is. They'll probably be able to kill the Ajani. You'll get to keep the 2/1 cat warrior token around. I don't know if there's a spot for this in Modern, because there might be a deck that just like wants to play this card is the problem.
Yeah, and you want to play a bunch of other cats. That's the other problem. In order to actually make this card as powerful as it can be, you need to play with a bunch of weak cards. So I would say this is a commander card, but the unfortunate part of it is that you don't get to maximize it either, because you need to play other red permanents in order to make the 0 ability as good as it can be. So you're still not maximizing it because it itself is white. I'm not really seeing it. I don't mind it being a 1-2 that makes a 2-1 for two, like two bodies, three power, three toughness. That's pretty reasonable. Like maybe it's good enough as a standalone, you know, just pumping out 2-1s on the backside. And occasionally you start like, you know, putting counters on those 2-1s. But I'm skeptical of that.
Yep. Same. Apparently the flares are going to be a cycle. I forgot about this. So we have the green flare, flare cultivation, one green, sorcery. You may sacrifice a non-token green creature rather than pay the spell's mana cost. Sure, you'll have two basic land cards, reveal those cards, put one of them on the battlefield and one of them in your hand. Ross, I'm a little more into this one than I was the other one. I don't know, like, we'll have to see if it's a spot. If it put both the lands into play, I think it might be a little too powerful because there are a lot of good, you know, early green creatures to do this with. I'm thinking of, what's the creature in Nitfit?
Veteran Explorer.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Veteran Explorer with this card. Seems really sweet.
Yeah, but that's a combo.
Yeah, it's a combo. Because like in Legacy,
Arboreal Grazer?
Yeah, Arboreal Grazer is a really, really good one.
That's a good one.
Okay, so when I see this card, I joke about this. Every set, the like people like Dom and the lands players and the amulet players, they just get some card. And they're like, oh, this is just a random card I get to shove in my deck and it just makes it better somehow. And this one might be the one.
I don't think this is one for amulet because you have to find basic lands.
Yeah.
But maybe for like the Gruul Valakut deck, you know, if that deck just wants to turbo, because you play Arboreal Grazer into this on turn one, you have three lands on the battlefield, and you have an extra land in hand, so you know you're making your land drop next turn to get up to four mana on turn two. So you're casting the One Ring on turn two, or you're casting multiple other ramp spells and getting potentially up to seven on turn three, so you could play Primeval Titan even with like Veil of Summer up for their counterspell on it.
I also think this is a really good commander card, too, because this, like, they play, what are the two different three manas they play? Kadama's Reach and...
Cultivate,
and like, this is just... It's cultivate at its floor.
Yeah.
It costs an extra green. It costs one green. But
that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, the upside is just so high on this card.
Yeah, and the fact that you can still reasonably cast it in those Valakut decks, I could see it. I think you need one other early creature to sacrifice to it. I don't know what that creature is. Like, Sakura Tribelder really isn't it.
Right.
But I'm trying to figure out, like, what other one-mana creature works, but... Like, maybe, like, Sakura Tribe Scout, if you just use Tribe Scout once.
Young Wolf.
No, yeah. But, like, that you can build a cool-looking deck that way. So, that one I do like more than the Blue Flare.
Yep. Next up, pretty good limited card, I think, is going to be pretty good in this limited set. Two red, white, or an enchantment. It says Scurry of Gremlins. When this enters the battlefield, create 2/1/1 red gremlin creature tokens. Then you get an amount of energy counters equal to the number of creatures you control. And then you can pay four energy, and creatures you control get +1/+0 and haste until end of turn. This is not a constructed card, I don't think. This doesn't scream constructed to me. Maybe it's like some combo finisher in an energy deck, which doesn't probably happen. Probably going to be a really good limited card, though.
Yeah, it's like a souped-up heroic reinforcements, right?
Yeah.
As long as you have two other creatures on the battlefield, it works like heroic reinforcements that then stays on the battlefield. So you can blink it with things to get more energy. You can sink your other energy into it. It should be an excellent limited card, but I agree, not constructed.
Next one, card I'm really digging and really love the name. If you say it really fast, it sounds like the card that it's referencing. Psychic Frog, also known as Psychotog. Anyway, Psychic Frog, blue-black for a creature frog is a 1/2. Whenever Psychic Frog deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, draw a card. You can discard a card and put a +1/+1 counter on it. And you can exile three cards from your graveyard, and it gains flying until it's hurt. If any of this, like the blue-black strategies like this come back, Ross, it's going to be because of this card. And I kind of love this card reading it, but this is one of those ones that like I worry that's a trap because we're like, this would have been so good like 7 years ago. And that's just not Magic nowadays.
Yeah, as I've said, there's a lot of good removal around, but it only costs 2 mana. You can protect it from something like an early Unholy Heat or a Lightning Bolt, and then it can recoup the card advantage for you. So it matches up reasonably well against some of the other, some of the removal that people will be playing against it early. And if they don't answer it, there's a lot of potential here. So I'm intrigued by it. I particularly just want a Thoughtseize into it.
Yeah.
Like, I just, you know, just clear the way, make sure they don't have the removal spell of the blocker, and play it on turn two, and you put them in a very awkward spot right from the get-go. I don't really know, like, what kind of deck that goes into. Like, I know people have been playing like Demir Scam recently with Sitaru. Maybe this card goes into that. So you have a bunch of discard to play with it. But it's, and also
it's another good blue-black card because it pitches to all of your free spells. Like,
And it generates some card advantage to undo the card advantage from your pitch spells if you have to pitch a bunch of them early. So maybe it just slots right into that deck. But I'm cautiously optimistic about it.
Yeah, I'm optimistic about this card. And I'm not going to name names, but there's been certain people who've worked in WotC for a few years now, working on the card design stuff, that I've heard them mention multiple times that Psychotog is not a modern legal card. I'm wondering if this is where that kind of spawned from. You know, maybe there's a specific person I'm thinking about who I've heard say this multiple times. I wonder if they pushed this card.
Does their name rhyme with Schmandru Schmown?
That's not the person I was thinking about, but that could be one of the people who does it. I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to respond to any other.
When I think Demir deck, that like, he's
sure.
The...
I'm about to cry. Or it's the same rhyme with Jesus Christ.
I wouldn't want to call him out directly.
Sure. And then, like we thought would happen, the last couple things in here. Blessing Mire, Polluted Delta, Windswept Heath, Wood of Foot Hills, and Flooded Strand are going to be in the set. And we're going to get extra treatments of those cards. So you're going to get another version of those fetch lands. And they're going to have like three different forms of art. And they'll have retro and cool bounce. There's also two more cards.
There's a couple reprints at the bottom.
Priest of Titania, and one that I think actually probably has a chance is Lelia the Blade Reforged. Two and a red legendary creature spirit warrior. It's got haste for a 2/2. Whenever it attacks, you exile the top card of your library. You may play the card this turn. Whenever one or more cards are put into exile from your library or your graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on Lelia. This card is way better than I thought it was when I read it the first couple times I played it. If there's any kind of like red prison might actually, it's possible red prison could possibly like something like that can show up in modern, though. Spirit Guide being gone kind of hurts a little.
Yeah, you don't get that, so those really explosive turn ones,
chalices and stuff. Yeah,
as a result, but it is still just a powerful card. This has been a vintage cube staple
it's
for the
a
last
very
few iterations.
High pick. It is a very high pick too. Like I have no problem like taking this card like first or second. Like, if you have a mid-ranger aggressive-ish red deck, like, this card's really good in certain matchups, too. Like, think about if you're, like, almost like a prowess deck or something in modern, right? Like, you're, like, an aggressive deck, and your opponent's deck is just a bunch of removal spells. This is the kind of card that you can bring in out of the sideboard that not only threatens your opponent with, like, a lot of damage very quickly, but recoups some of your early stuff that you've lost and, like, keeps you up in card quantity.
Yeah, it's a little expensive for prowess. Like that deck's curve really stops it too. I just think it's generally a good card. It just doesn't have a very obvious home in the current modern metagame. So it may just end up being a victim of that, where it waits around to find a home. But it's definitely above the modern is a very high threshold for playability, and Lelia is above that threshold.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Priest of Titania, one in the green. 1/1 Elf Druid, add green for each elf on the battlefield. I think the days of this card have passed quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately.
The
Orcish Bowmaster is like... They got rid of Fury right after they put a Bowmaster in the format, and just, oh, God.
I loved this card as a child, though. I will tell you this. When I was younger, this card, like, if you had Priest of Titanias in your deck was great.
I've registered this card in a Legacy Grand Prix, so...
Wow, that's, you are fucking old, Ross.
Yeah, so you don't have to tell me. And there's enablers for it, you know, in a vacuum, playing this card with Elvish the one that makes 1/1s when you play out when other elves enter the battlefield, and Dwinen's Elite. You know, you generate a ton of mana really, really quickly. Like, this card is very threatening still in current modern to cast on turn 2. It's just way too easy to answer. And getting this card consistently killed by Ren 6 and by Orcish Bowmaster is just, it's devastating. I don't like, even if they don't have one of those cards, just bolting it, you know, it's just too easy to kill. I wish things were different, everybody. I wish they were. I wish we could play elves. But we can't.
But lost, we cannot.
Yeah. Elves hasn't been playable in Modern in, 5 or 6 years. I'm trying to remember the year I top 8 at an open with that. I think it was August of 2017. August 9th and 10th at SCG Richmond.
It really has been a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, just passed him by. So, yeah, you know, maybe hopefully there's a cool elf deck that you can draft, because you're not playing that one in Modern.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. I don't know if we're going to have spoilers anytime soon for
May 21st, the official preview season starts.
So, a few weeks. So, I'd be on the lookout for another flashback episode soon, I think, is what's going to happen next week.
That sounds like a plan, Tannen.
Absolutely. So, for everybody at home listening, thanks very much. Got to see some really cool cards and talk about Modern quite a bit today. I didn't think that was going to be on the docket, so that was nice. But thanks for listening. We'll see you all in the next episode.